You are listening to the Marilyn Manson Cases Podcast, the podcast discussing the accusations, lawsuits, and legal news surrounding shock rocker Marilyn Manson. Please note topics include allegations of abuse, some may find disturbing.
There's this new article in the Daily Wire. Do they have a huge readership on this?
They do. They have huge. They're known generally as being more conservative, and so Candace Owens, Ben Shapiro, and people like that are associated with them. Some of our viewers, that's a negative, but it's going to get massive readership. It's going to get a lot of people who weren't even aware of any of this going, wait, what? And it's sad. It's sad from the perspective of some Marilyn Manson fans who do not like the right wing, right? And remember the old days when the right wing was kind of one of Manson's biggest thorns in the side. But the political landscape has shifted.
But that is a huge audience. Mm-hmm. Huge. I mean, look at the article. Evan Rachel Wood's ex says she inflicted psychological harm on their 7-year-old son during custody dispute. In December 2020, Evan Rachel Wood entered into a custody battle with her ex-partner. Already a good start because it's accurate. Anna says initially Bell and Wood split custody of the boy with few issues, as Bell wrote in court documents publicly released last week and reviewed by the Daily Wire. And then it says, but 2 months later, in February of 2021, she made explosive allegations against Marilyn Manson. But this is why I say in this next paragraph, people need to pay more attention to the Tennessee custody documents, because the allegations coincide with the custody dispute. Wood and Bell alternated holidays with Jack, and Christmas of 2020 was supposed to be Bell's time with his son. Now, remember, this child is supposed to be Jewish, for one. And they have this situated for a Christmas holiday, a Christmas visit with his father. But on December 22nd of that year, so this is 2020, Evan did not arrive to return Jack, their son, to Bell for the holidays as agreed. I do want to point out to people who have not read this yet, it even talks about the FBI letter and Ilmagore's name at the top and how Jamie received that FBI letter on the Signal app. So this was very good of them to include.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very I think good. we should make sure that people understand because not only in this custody dispute, not only did Evan Rachel Wood give a fake letter to Jamie Bell, but a fake FBI letter to try to fool him basically into thinking that the FBI wanted her to run away with their son because she was in danger from Marilyn Manson. But anyway, but before that, preceding that, she had also sent him on a kind of a wild goose chase, where she gave him this phone number that she said belonged to this FBI agent if he wanted to call and check up on the situation. But it didn't belong to that FBI agent. It belonged to some other woman that they had drawn into this unknowingly. And so then this woman is getting calls and messages, kind of frantic, from Jamie Bell saying, I need some help. I need some guidance. He even called her on Christmas, didn't he? And so you've got all that going on. Well, also, when Evan Rachel Wood, when she sent Jamie Bell this fake FBI letter, it had her girlfriend's name in. She sent it via Signal app or a copy of it, or I don't know. But it had her girlfriend's name, co-conspirator and girlfriend's name, Ilmagore, originally in the message the first time. And so Jamie Bell, that's what he was saying in these court documents. It's basically like, this is strange, because why does it have Ilmagore's name on it if it's supposed to be from an FBI agent and, you know, from Evan? Like, what's going on here? And so yeah, that's a detail that a lot of people don't know. They might know about the FBI letter. They might even know about the fake phone phone calls to the fake agent. But yeah, they even screwed up the original presentation.
It says, on December 23rd, Wood sent Bell a letter supposedly from law enforcement who were working on the investigation. This is the air quote FBI investigation against Marilyn Manson. It was sent to Bell on the messaging app Signal. It was not on any former letterhead. Bell was also sent an image that the name Ilmagore at the top, looks like there's a spelling error there. Gore is a graphic artist that Wood dated for more than a year. Wood deleted the post and sent Bell one that didn't have Gore's name at the top. So they couldn't even do this correctly in their whole scheme.
I know.
But it's so great that it details it. It even says the letter contained a signature from someone who allegedly worked at the Federal Violent Crimes Department, a department he says does not exist. It's amazing to see all this detailed, accurate information in the Daily Wire. A source close to the singer told the Daily Wire that Manson has never threatened Evan or her family. She's never presented any evidence of any threats against her or her family, added the source, who requested anonymity. Manson hasn't had any interaction with Evan in nearly a decade, so kind of the same stuff we've already heard. Evan is looking for someone to blame for her family problems, which, according to court documents, she's actually causing herself.
I love that. It's great.
Her ex-husband asserted that she caused psychological harm to their young son through prolonged separation. Evan's threat to her own family stability is very real and well documented, unlike the alleged threats she claims to have received from Manson. I just love this article. And it also rehashes the Mother's Day post that Evan did of herself. I don't know if anyone knows about that. But last year, last Mother's Day, Evan put out a post that was highly publicized in the media, basically thanking herself for being such a great mother. Yahoo had a very bad article out, and next thing you know, a few days later, it was updated with very accurate information. So here's the article. Evan Rachel Wood's ex, Jamie Bell, reportedly gets primary custody of son, what we know so far. When this article originally published, it was actually only 4 minutes long, and now it's up to 8 minutes. And a lot of the verbiage has changed. It really calls out Evan, I think, in here if you go through it. And it goes through some of Evan's history of coming forward with her allegations prior to naming Marilyn Manson in 2018, where she testified in front of the House Judiciary Subcommittee. I don't know what Marilyn Manson's team is doing, but I think they're really winning here. What do you think?
I think it's definitely a change of strategy and more aggressive now. I think that, and this is just my own personal opinion, it's not, you know, information from him or anything, but I think that there was probably a real desire when all this first happened and he was first canceled and all those women came out and stuff. I think that there was a desire to see if he sort of stood back and let things play out and was very calm and patient. And also I think wanted to let the legal process play out in case that was going to work out for him or could help him or save him, and didn't want to mess up anything. It's like, okay, I'm not going to overreact. I'm going to be the patient person. I'm going to be the cool-headed person. You know, it's kind of like that famous poem when everyone else around you is losing your head. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was the strategy, but I think that what has probably happened as of late is that it's like, okay, now that it's been 2 years, I'm not going to give up the rest of my life to this bullshit. Also, some things have changed, like with Johnny Depp. I think that people are starting to see the light more on this stuff. And the legal process is playing out. And it's not really, I'm not trying to be a downer, but it's not really, as we know, playing out very well for Manson. And that's not because he's guilty or whatever. It's because some of these outrageous laws, especially like the new anti-slap laws, they just want to cut off people like him at the knees so that they cannot expose hoaxers and liars. And so I think basically what's probably happened is all of these things, a confluence of things. And he's like, okay, it's time for me to start fighting back. And so assuming that he has the PR people helping him or whatever, you know, I would assume that things are getting more aggressive, and they should.
We saw Manson come out not too long ago. Was it almost 2 weeks ago already? In a very strong way. It looks like maybe he even has new music coming. It's hard to say. And it seemed like a real opening for Evan Rachel Wood to basically fuck up and try to put this PR spin that she, you know, gave up custody of her son to protect him from, you know, threats that don't exist.
I see some people in the chat asking why was it that Esme Bianco, one of the Manson accusers, she was the Game of Thrones lady, why did she contact the Rammstein accusers? This is interesting because I've been told that Esme Bianco, prior to this, was a huge Rammstein fan. And in fact, like, I was kind of concerned that hearing that she was a huge Rammstein fan, that she might have poisoned the band against, I was concerned that maybe she knew the band and she might have even kind of poisoned them against Manson, because apparently she was running around everywhere she could spreading these lies about Manson. But anyway, it turns out she doesn't have a relationship with the band, but she was a huge Rammstein fan. And so apparently she is now unfollowed. She was following Till Lindemann and the lead singer and the guy that everybody's, you know, people are freaking out about. Apparently she unfollowed him and she's been in contact now with the accusers. So I think that what's going on is, look, Esme Bianco, she sees herself much like Evan Rachel Wood. She sees herself now as this great activist and advocate for women.
When I finally found the courage 7 years later to seek legal advice, I was told, despite having photographic, video, and written evidence, that it was too late. Nothing could be done.
And so I think this is her just trying to move in and get in the action again. Her career is kind of over. I'm not trying to be mean, but Game of Thrones was the peak and that's it. And, you know, she didn't get anywhere with the Manson stuff. She got a couple of articles. She got an article in New York Times, The Cut magazine or New York magazine. She got into Rolling Stone. She had just a brief moment in Phoenix Rising. And then she had that Good Morning America interview, but really, like, all of that's done. And so I think she's just trying to insert herself into another big named rock star hoax and hoping maybe to get involved somehow, or maybe just, you know, wanting to gossip behind the scenes or whatever.
This woman
is a snake. She got a lot of shit. She helped Evan Rachel Wood get a lot of shit stirred up against Manson. And the point is in her lawsuit against Manson, one of her big claims is that Manson got frustrated while they were filming a movie, like a legit movie. He was trying to film a music video, kind of guerrilla style. And she said that he got frustrated and he threw the flip phone, not at her. He didn't throw it at her. He just, like, threw it. And she said it was traumatizing.
Right. So with Esme Bianco, she doesn't only consider herself the co-writer of the Phoenix Act bill, but also part of the Phoenix Act still. Which is okay. Interesting because she's not on any of the documents, and some of the other women aren't, but there's literally a Medium article with her name on it that she's like the co-founder or whatever of the Phoenix Act. So my question is, do you see correlations with the Shelby accusations against Rammstein? Hope I got that right. With Marilyn Manson's allegations?
Well, she has no reason to claim that anyone in the band or the crew put that bruise on her. She does not allege that Till Lindemann did anything to her when they had that, she says, awkward encounter where he thought she wanted sex and she didn't. She doesn't allege he forced her or anything. These are the correlations that I see, though, particularly strong, in a strong way with the Rammstein thing, is that the way that the media, it's not only this woman who's come out and accused him, and now it seems like a couple of anonymous people who are joining in, but it's the way that the media is running, or they're running with this, and they're focusing on his art and Till Lindemann. So Till Lindemann, you know, for people who don't know, Rammstein, it is also like Marilyn Manson, the band is into darker themes and artistically exploring the dark side. But my point is that is being used against him, and people are saying, oh, look at the lyrics to the song. Look at this poem that he wrote. His art is totally being dragged into this as an indication of his character and whether he did certain things or not. This idea that you shouldn't have pretty women on the front row at a Rammstein concert, or you shouldn't have a lot of pretty, younger women at a party. It seems like it's the same sort of thing that we got in the Manson case, where even though Evan Rachel Wood was of age, and there's this emphasis on, oh, I was so young, I didn't know. And so even if I did say yes, I really couldn't mean yes, right? Or couldn't really be a yes because I'm so young. And it's the same thing with this Lindemann thing. This woman, like I said, this Shelby woman, she was definitely of age, and yet she called him a because he hit on her. And then also you have one of this anonymous now reports, or these anonymous allegations that's coming out in German media, but she claims that he had painful with her and that she did not say anything to him about it, quote, because he was Till Lindemann, unquote, but that later on she realized that it was a kind of assault because there was a power imbalance. So now what we're seeing
is that something that was fully consensual, that people are even admitting was fully consensual, is it's now being rewritten a bad behavior on Lindemann's part because there was a power differential, because there's always going to be a power differential. You know, I guess that we just want to go to a society now where everyone has to date within their age bracket, their class, their race. You know, hell, let's just completely segregate society. I mean, that's how crazy these people are.
Listen, this is so similar to some, in some sense, to the Manson allegations, because she went to social media. She created it. Well, she already had an Instagram account, but then she created a Twitter account and put it in her bio, kind of like
weaponized it.
Yeah. Now they're doing things to kind of prove their story, even if they don't make sense. It's weird to me. Like the whole 5-hour a chat with the police and what
she claims. Yeah, she claims that when she talked to police, when they finally did their job or whatever, because she was complaining they weren't taking it seriously enough. Yeah, you know why they weren't taking it seriously? Because they could tell that you were a fucking liar and a weirdo, lady. But no, she claimed then that, oh, I had a 5-hour interview with them. 5 hours? She was originally seemed to be claiming that Till Lindemann and his assistant, Joe Letts, I hate to call him his assistant because he's a musician in his own right, but also he's, you know, kind of Till Lindemann's assistant. she claimed that that Joe Letts, either Joe Letts or Till Lindemann, yes, drugged her at the pre-party. And she claims that her drink was frothy, except that it's very well known that Till Lindemann, when he mixes drinks, he mixes tequila with Prosecco. And I interviewed one of the women there, and I've gotten stories from some of the others, and they said that that's what was going on, is he was giving out these shots or these drinks of Prosecco mixed with tequila. So, of course, it's going to be frothy. She claims that after the pre-party, this woman claims that she got so wasted that it couldn't just have been from alcohol alone. It had to have been from a drugging. And then she claims that she was just like completely almost incapacitated and blacked out or out of her mind at toward the end of the concert and then at the after party. And so she apparently doesn't have a positive drug test. She says she took a test, or the police tested her, so has no evidence of that, said her test was negative that she took. She claims that he hit on her at one point and asked her for sex, and she turned him down, she claims. But she's actually not coming out and claiming that like one of the band members did anything to her necessarily, except that also she was showing off this huge bruise and claiming that she got it somewhere that night after she got messed up. That seems to be the original complaint. Now, over time, she's kind of like backed away from some of it, and it's sort of morphed into this, well, Rammstein, it creates this unsafe environment for women where things can happen to them. And she's still holding on to this idea that she was drugged, even though she has like nothing to indicate that. And of course, what's interesting is the videos, and I've shown some of them on my channel, but the videos that have come out from the concert that other people took, where you can see her, yes, she acts very drunk, but she acts very like clear too, very like in control. And she's sort of harassing at least this assistant, this Rammstein guy, Joe, because there's tape that's come out, video that's come out of him kind of trying to get away from her. And she keeps grabbing onto him and getting her face in, you know, close to him and stuff. But again, I've talked to women who were at the after party, women at the concert, women who were with her that whole time. And they said that she never acted like she was drugged up or that she was blacking out or that she was passing out or anything. She just seemed like she was a weirdo who was having a great time and was being really loud and obnoxious.
Wow. So I'm definitely going to keep track of your videos to kind of keep up, because there's way too much going on with the whole thing that it keeps changing the stories.
So somebody was saying she was hitting herself at one point with a purse. Yeah, it was a purse. Wow. Or was it a fan? But she was really energetic and into it. And this is again on one of my videos. And she starts like hitting herself and she's like, Rammstein. And it's just like, she's not stable, but also she's clearly not tranquilized, as she would have us believe. Now, are they accusers as we would understand them in the proper sense of people who've actually like gone through some kind of a court process or some kind of adjudication, or where the police have actually weighed in, arrested someone or charged someone? Is it people who've actually gone on the record and put their names to this and we can verify that they're credible? Is it people who have very, you know, very disturbing or specific or grounded stories? No, it's generally none of that. You know, some of Manson's accusers were upset that he told jokes.